Crazy Old White Man from the Hood, written by Lee Gaylord, Chapter 10, Back to Detroit. Sharon told me that Nancy was in trouble with the law. She was on the way to school when the police picked her up. I never bothered to call her. At 7 in the evening, she was in the juvenile detention facility. This was her first chance to call home. She was accused of beating up a boy who happened to be a police sergeant's nephew. The kid had a habit of causing trouble and calling his uncle. In this case, she was not the one who beat the kid up. She was with the two girls who did beat him up. The other girl said that she had nothing to do with the beating, and she pled not guilty. She got the same judge for this one. It was with the same girls. In this case, a girl spit on her, and she yanked the girl's ponytail. Her friends got into a fight. In this case, the hair pulling was a battery, and it started to fight. Nancy was 15. A beautiful young lady. She was also the kind of girl, like her mother, that you instantly like. Problem was her friends. First case was dismissed, but she pled guilty to the second. While we were waiting for the sentencing, we found out how bad things were. She would say she was spending a night at a friend's house. A friend would say she was staying at Nancy's. Mothers never checked. Nancy was drinking and smoking pot. She had been doing it for 3 years, and her mother never caught on. There was also a pedophile coming around. He was a white man in his 50s, with a good job at one of the auto companies. When he was caught, he had an album of 150 pictures of black girls between the ages of 12 and 15. Nancy was not in there. He approached her to recruit for him. He pled guilty and got a short jail term and probation. If the girls were white, he probably would have gotten a long jail term. If he goes back to that neighborhood, he'll probably be killed. To me, the minimum sentence for pedophiles should be life with no parole. Nancy was sentenced to 6 months in the girls' detention facility. She went to a good facility run by the Catholic Church. The judge said that she would be under her control until she was 18. The weekend before she was supposed to be released, she came home on a pass. Then she went back and she tested positive for alcohol. She was sent to a treatment center for 6 months. After that, she ended up back in a Catholic facility, staying there until she was 18. I lost contact with her mother. She called a little while ago and we talked about getting back together, but I haven't heard from her since. I know that she's working midnights as a security supervisor. Nancy is living with her mother. Well, here we are at another bar. This time, instead of a redneck bar, it's a black-owned bar with black clientele. I was at a steakhouse, and a young lady came in that looked a lot like my second wife. I was about 3 blocks away from where she lived, and I thought, uh-oh, I have to get out of here. It wasn't her. She sat down next to me, and we talked. Her name was Jeanette. You had me scared, I said. I thought you were my ex-wife. We talked for a while, then her boyfriend came in. He was white, and a cop named Bill. By this time, we were like brother and sister. She introduced me to her boyfriend and mentioned her bar and asked me to come by. I went to Jeanette's bar and she introduced me to her sister, Tanya, who helped run the bar. I sat with Bill at the end of the bar, and we got to know each other. His partner and other black cops came in, and suddenly I found myself talking to a bunch of cops. The other cops realized that I was an Oriole, O-E-R-O, which is a reverse Oriole. White on the outside, black on the inside. And we got along well. A few days later, I told Bill, "You're the first white cop that I've liked." His partner patted me on the back and said, "You're a brother, and we agree with you." As a sidebar, at this time, I did not drink alcohol. I drank mostly cola. I was living in a motel and had an office. I was thinking about moving into my office, and Jeanette said, "Why don't you move into the bar? You can clean up between closings and openings and make rounds of the party store when we are open. When we have parties or entertainment, you can be the bouncer on the door for $5.50 an hour. You can collect a cover charge, check the women's purses, and frisk them in." I said, "I'll try it." After 2 weeks, I decided to move to my office. But Jeanette wanted me to come at 6 on Wednesday through Saturday. And I would get the ice, stock the bar with the beer from the back room, clean up, and open the bar at 7. She or her daughter Tanya would come in at 11 and take over. Now I was tending bar again. This time, the customers were more my type of people. When they first walked in and stopped and almost walked out, I called them, "Wait, you have the right place, just ignore the color of my skin. Barmaid comes at 11. Have a drink, and if you wish, come back when the women get here." Soon, I had some regular customers. Wednesdays and Thursday nights were slow. Jeanette told me to lock the door and only open it when the first customer comes in. I told her that was too much trouble and that the customers would think I was afraid. In the hood, you never show fear, especially if you're a gray-haired white man. Four young guys came in. The biggest one asked me for a shot of tequila. I said, "If you have a valid ID, I'll sell it to you. If you do not, you can have pop and shoot pool. You have to sit at a table." The guy smiled, pulled out a wad of bills, went past a couple of hundreds as far as 50, and said, "Sell me a fifth, and we will go. I'll give you 50 for it." I laughed and said, "If I sell you a fifth, you and your posse may go out and get yourselves killed. Or you may be a cop just waiting to bust my ass. Why don't you and your buddies take your young asses out of here?" He said, "No problem, old man. Thanks anyway. Come back when you're old enough, and I'll take care of you guys." A big dude came in. My first thought was that he was a cop. Cops are usually good tippers. I asked, "How you doing, officer?" He looked at me and smiled. "How did you know?" "I always know. I've been on both sides of the law, and I can usually spot a cop a mile away." He walked for a while. We talked for a while, and a young lady came in. She was a prison guard. He was a narc and arrested dealers. She guarded the dealers after they were arrested. And I bought from dealers for my lady. we were talking about the dealers that would get busted first and the ones that would get busted last. What's the difference, you ask? Good question. The dealers that sell to kids get busted first. And the dealers that are obvious and where the neighbors complain, the last ones are that help are the ones that help the people in the hood and do not sell to kids. For example, an old lady had her purse snatched. A dealer saw it and went after the guy. When the cop got there, the dealer was coming back with the purse. Cop asked where the thief was, and the dealer said he tripped and fell when I was chasing him. He's a couple blocks down the street. I think he hurt himself pretty bad when he fell. After the thief got out of the hospital, he went to jail. Witnesses said he tripped and fell, and the dealer got the purse and returned it. The dealer had made sure that his customers did not cause problems in the hood. If they did, they were told not to come back. If they did come back, they learned why they should not come back. Next customer was a guard at the county jail. He said, "You look familiar. Did you ever work at the county jail?" The narc laughed and said he was on the other side of the bars. "I enjoyed tending bar in this place. The customers were more enjoyable than the other place. The tips were good from the cops and the women. I never had a problem when I refused to serve someone because they looked too young or had no ID. At the redneck bar, half the time I was keeping peace and I got hit in the jaw twice. Here, there were no threats, no problems. I was accepted by the customers as one of them. I was back to living in my office in a neighborhood that was pretty nice. At night, it would change. You would see the homeless and the hookers. They were there during the day, but more noticeable at night. There was a young man who looked like he was around 20. He is about 6'6". He was quiet and really didn't bother anybody, but at night he would be hanging outside by a bar. When people came out, they would see him and his size and the blank look on his face, and it would scare him. I don't think he was dangerous. He would just stand there for hours in one spot like a statue. Police decided to get him out of the neighborhood. So they picked him up and dropped him off out in the suburbs. By the time they got back to where they picked him up, he was standing there. He would go into the party stores and gas station markets and get cookies and cakes and eat them right there. He would put the wrappers in the garbage and walk out. No one would say anything to him. One day he was found in a dumpster. The word on the street was that a store owner or owners did it. One of the hookers used to stop and talk to me every once in a while. One night, there was a knock on the door. A man said that she was in his car and needed help. I went to the car and she had a metal sticking out of her leg and was in a wheelchair. She was a victim of a hit and run down the street. Few hookers were lost that way. I brought her in and called a cab for her. I gave her some money to cover the cab and a night in a motel. I didn't see her for a while. The cab driver brought her by, and he took her in. I haven't seen her since. When Bernice got back from the, to the city, she rented a house down the street from where I was before, and Mary moved in. Mary would beat her, and one time tried to put lye down her throat. A nephew found out, and when Mary came out, he beat her up, almost killed her. The neighbors were all out watching. She was told that if she beat Aunt Bernice again, she was going to get beat up worse, and all the neighbors would swear that she fell. So she left. About 2 years later, I was back in the city. When I was back in the city, Bernice had a stroke 1 month after her 40th birthday. I told her that was the best thing for her because it made her quit using drugs and alcohol. I slept on her lazy boy chair and helped her out for a while. A month later, she had another stroke and quit smoking cigarettes. Now I'm happy to say that she's doing well. She's getting around with a cane. She has to relearn how to drive using her left foot. She called me and said that she was getting married, but she wanted me. I told her that I will always be her friend, and whenever she needs me, I'll be available for her. But marriage is out. I could never trust her. Every time she was late, I would think that she was back on drugs. I would always, in the back of my mind, blame her for the loss of our baby. The cancer came back, and I'm waiting for good health insurance to kick it so I can have it cut out. I feel the plastic surgeon was too careful to make the ear look right, and he missed some on the top. Now the top of my ear is eating away. I want it cut off so that all the cancer is gone. I will just cover it with my hair. Crazy Old White Man from the Hood, written by Lee Gaylord. Chapter 11, The New Millennium, A New Life Downtown. Lisa. She was about 45 when I met her. Because of her crack addiction, she looked older. I saw a picture of her taken before her crack addiction, and she was a living doll. She lived with Mary. It was short and heavy. Mary dressed like a boy and wore her hair like a boy. Both were good people. I had a transom above the door to my apartment, and during the warm weather, it was open. So when I cooked, Lisa could smell the food, and she'd come knocking on the door when it was ready. I smoked little cigars, and she would come and visit for the smell of them. One time, a big guy was in her place, and he went wacko on some drugs. Lisa came to me to help her get him out. I have a way of talking to people who are drunk or high on drugs. I got him calmed down and out of the building. After I had been there for about 6 months, she was evicted. I would see her every once in a while in the corridor. Bill and Gil were brothers. Bill would bring girls to my room and drop them off. He and Gil were both addicts, and they sold drugs to keep their habits going. Eventually, Bill went to rehab and had been clean and sober for over a year. He had a job and doing well. Gil had a wife, Robin. Robin was a cute little lady with a mouth that would not stop. Gil would cheat on her often. So he'd drop her off at my place and go do his thing. before I said that, I would not mess with another man's woman if he treated her right. I also feel that what is good for the goose is good for the gander. If one is cheating on the other has the right to cheat. A divorce may be the best answer, but if you cannot afford a divorce, mutual game playing may be the next best thing. Gil may have thought Robin and I would just talk, but I don't think he was stupid. It got to where she was happy. She was messing around because he had some fun. Well, he was gone. Jenny was a cute little thing. She was in her 30s, and until recently, I had never seen her without being high or without her mouth going a mile a second. Trying to get money for more crack. Since she cut down, I had noticed that I always thought she is a very nice person and seems to be very intelligent. I met Jenny soon after I moved into the building. We had a fling or two or more. I also bought clothes from her. For $20, I got an Adidas coat and a nice sexual interlude. She was planning to go to rehab and didn't want me to get lonely, so she brought a replacement for her. She didn't go to rehab, so I had the two coming by. Problem was that she would come by late, as late as 3 in the morning. I'd be sleeping and hear the tapping on the door. I would roll over and a tap would become a knock. I would cover my ears and a knock would become a bang. I would open the door and say, "What in the hell do you want?" Dumb question. She say, "Did I wake you up?" I guess 3 in the morning we all ask dumb questions. I told her, "Jenny, I like you and I enjoy our time together. After midnight, on weeknights, I do not function well. Please don't come back at this time again." Of course, that didn't stop her. She would knock on my door and walk right in and take her clothes off. I would say, "Sorry, honey, I don't have the time." Or, "Put your clothes back on, I have company." Or, "I want it, I want it, I want it." Jenny and I got to be pretty close. Then I did not see her for a while. They got new security guards, and they would not let her in the building. A few months ago, she had a stroke and a massive heart attack. I saw her a couple weeks ago, and she was looking good. She lived with a guy in a nice high-rise a few blocks away. He let her have everything she wanted. I think he was running low on money because 2 days ago, she tried to sell me a coat. The other day she came by, she moved out of downtown, said that she got an ID so that she will be able to visit when she is in the neighborhood. I had missed her cute little body. She had cut down and on the crack, and she looked like she was still using. When I met Eva, she was 21, but looked like she was 15. Just as I walked into the lobby, she pulled her pants down and mooned a friend of hers, who was a security guard. When we first met, she wanted to be me to be her uncle. Then she wanted to be her man. I told her that what she needed now was a father. She immediately adopted me as her father. She tells everyone that I'm her father. She was raised around drugs. Her mother was in prison on drug charges. She was with her uncle when the cops pulled him over. He was busted for possession of crack. She had a joint in her pocket, so she got busted for possession. I don't know how she stayed away from the crack. She quit using the weed, but still drinks. I'm trying to teach her about life. She knows the streets, but she doesn't know the world outside the streets. She has a problem with trusting the wrong people, and with spending money on clothes, and not having enough money to pay her bills. She's doing better now. She works two jobs. Her mother was getting out of prison. She used to live in the building I live in. She went to prison before I moved in. Eva moved to a house just before her mother came home. She put a deposit on it and paid the rent. Her mother got out and spent more time in this building and with her crackhead friends and her daughter. She stole her rent money from Eva and told everyone Eva stole it from her. I told Eva that if she wasn't careful, her mama was going to get her sent to jail. I live two blocks from Detroit Tigers home stadium. At the end of the ball game, the street is full of cars. At night, fireworks and a sold-out ball game. There are over 1.5 million people downtown. Her mama was walking down the middle of the street, drunk and high on crack. I don't know how she missed getting hit by a car. Luckily for Eva, her mother was sent back to prison within a couple months. Her mama's friends were kicked out of the building. Eva lives and works about 50 miles away. She stays with relatives who are not on drugs. About once a month, she comes to visit. We order a pizza and talk. I give her some money to pay her ride, and she heads for home. She calls a couple times a week. Her mother will be getting out soon. I hope she stays away from the addicts this time. I hope she goes back to being a mother. Eva needs her mother clean and sober. She had a hard life, and no one showed her love until I came around. Her mother comes back and goes back on drugs. If her mother comes back and goes back on drugs, I'm afraid that it may ruin all the progress we have made. Eva sounds old, but she is a very fragile young lady. She sounds tough, but she's a very fragile young lady. She just called. Talk about a coincidence. She's moving back to the city. I will see more of her. But she will be back around the people who get her in trouble. Nancy, not the one who calls me Daddy Too, was 24. I met her, but she looked younger. She is petite and has a beautiful body. She is a personality that would help her in getting jobs and working with the public, but she has a drug and alcohol problem. I met her and we instantly clicked. After a while, she needed a place to stay. I told her she could stay with me, but if she came home after midnight during the week, she would not come in. I was not going to wait up for her, and as long as she was addicted, I wasn't going to give her a key. First night was fine. Second night, I said that she had to find another place. If she needed a place for the night, she could stay for the night. Nancy's addicted to weed and alcohol. And I think she uses crack every once in a while, but not often. The people that want to legalize weed are wrong. I see what it does every day. I've seen kids go from honor roll to failing because of weed. After a while, the weed loses its ability to give you a high. And you want, so you want to drink alcohol too. Soon the high from the combination is not like it was, so you go to crack. Now they have a more potent heroin out there. Gives you a better high. If you're not afraid of a needle, you can smoke it. Now, you're smoking weed, crack, and heroin, and drinking beer. Or six of your base of your brains are getting fried, or six, and your brains are getting fried, tied, and laid to the side. Pretty soon, you'll have no more problems because you'll be dead. This is where Nancy was headed. I see her once a month. She comes to me and tells me that she loves me and wants to be with me, and I tell her, clean up her act, and we can give it a try. The sad thing is that about her is that she is in constant danger, not only from drugs, but from dealers and other addicts, crazy people out there that would love to rape her. Nancy is a probation violator, and as she's busted, she can go to prison for years. William is a man in my apartment building with one leg. He has two wheelchairs. One's electric, which he uses to go to a store, and the other is manual, which he uses for panhandling. He lives on the 12th floor. My apartment is next to the stairway. Heard banging on the stairs, I went to the stairway, and he was crawling down the stairs, dragging his wheelchair. Main elevators were out, so I told him to go to the freight elevator. I would call down and have it sent up. This man gets around. I see him on the street a lot. He moves along, and when people come by, he holds out his hand for money. He is one of the lucky ones. He did not lose his leg because of drug addiction, so he gets a disability and Medicare. Many of the ones missing limbs are drug addicts and homeless. When it's warm, they live in the bus shelters. I saw one man with one leg and no crutches. He would hop to his spot and sit on the sidewalk and beg. There's a young man with no legs. He gets around laying on his stomach on a mattress that is on a tabletop on a wheelchair. He gets around pretty well. I haven't noticed him begging. Sad thing is that most of them are there because of drugs. When you keep shooting up in one of the legs, you get open sores and eventually gangrene. Dwight is a Desert Storm veteran. He talks to himself. He sees me on the street and he'll start talking to me. It would be about nothing, and on a rare occasion, he talks sense, and you would get a story. He always asks me if I have coffee to give him. One day, he was in his room yelling and throwing things. His neighbor called the police. They knocked on the door and told him to open the door. He said no. So they left. A few minutes later, he went outside and they were waiting for him. They took him to the VA hospital. I was on the bus. There was a big guy in front of me. He had a football helmet on. He was talking into his hand. Figured from the conversation that he thought he was a secret agent. He told the agents in the car to pick up spies in a 1969 red and white Chevy. Many of the street people belong in institutions. They do not have the ability to live on the outside world. They do not take their medication, and some seem to be dangerous to themselves and possibly to others. Many are drug addicts and or alcoholics. Some are hiding from the world. Matt was a security guard for the building. He was also schizophrenic. As long as he took his medication, he was fine. He ran out of the medication and was smoking pot. He fell asleep and had a dream that he was being chased by guys with guns. There was a knock on his door. He grabbed a gun and shot 4 shots through the door. He opened the door and Fred was lying on the floor with blood all over his shirt. Matt shot 2 more times. We all liked Matt and also liked Fred. Fred was dead on the scene. He was a nice old guy and he helped a lot of people. And he and Matt were the best of friends. The day before Matt called his doctor asking for more pills, the doctor said he would have to wait a couple of days. Is Fred's death the fault of Matt, the system, or the doctor? When God made Sandy, he broke the mold. Old corny saying, but in her case it is true. There is no way there will be another one. Sandy is a gem. No man can have her. She is a no-man woman. She does what she wants, when she wants. She lives with a man who thinks that she is his lady. Everyone tells him she is her lady. She tells him she is his roommate. And that's it. Sandy is alcoholic. She no longer uses crack, but every once in a while, she may share a joint with someone. She knows everything that goes on in the building and in the streets. If she needs someone to talk to, she comes to me. If I need someone to talk to, she's at my door. If I want to know about a woman, she tells me the whole story. Sandy also likes sex. She comes to me when she wants a good booty rub plus. Sometimes she comes in and we talk and she goes. Sometimes on her way out she asks, when can I get a booty rub? I tell her, when you want to talk, we talk. When you want sex, take off your clothes. Get on the bed and I'll get the hint. Sandy is short and thick. She has beautiful breasts and a booty that won't quit. A couple years ago, she was shot in the back of the head. The bullet came out through her chin. She's not supposed to survive. But the only way you can tell is the scar on her chin. And her speech is slurred. She was also in a fire near that time and jumped from the 4th floor. Broke all kinds of bones. She now has a distinctive walk. When it comes to street smarts, Sandy is the best. She She will go anywhere at any time and not worry about the streets. I don't think anyone's stupid enough to give her a problem. One of the best things about Sandy is that she never asks for money unless it is my change that she uses for bus fare. She sometimes gets my pop bottles. She always wants some of my little cigars. Sandy is honest. She does not hold her tongue. If you want the truth about something, ask Sandy. If you don't want the truth, don't ask Sandy. When someone is out of line, Sandy sets him or her straight. When someone is in danger, she will warn him or her. Sandy has come into my life and made it better. She has given me something that few others have given me. She has given me more wisdom and more drive to do what I want to do. What worries me about Sandy is that she still spends time with the addicts. I worry that she will stop saying no when she's around a crack or heroin. But then I realize that I say no to alcohol when I'm asked and when I go to a bar. I want to get a rehab going, and Sandy will be one of my key people. Good news about Sandy. She's got a job, and she's running up her flat by herself. She stopped drinking and smoking pot and running the streets. I hope she can keep it that way. I was waiting for a bus one day, and my favorite wino came up to me and said, "You look like Santa Claus." He ran his fingers through my hair. I gave him a cigarette, and the bus came. I was coming back home, and I got off the bus at my favorite girl-watching corner. It was at Wayne State University campus, and many good-looking college girls were going by while I waited for the bus. Behold, I heard my favorite wino, "Santa, how you doing?" I looked at my watch, and I had about 10 minutes before the bus would come. I was thinking, 10 minutes with this guy talking to me. The girl's going to see Santa and the wino shooting a bull on the corner. He said, "I knew you 5 years ago. You didn't have a beard then, and you lived in a hotel Park Avenue." I was surprised that he remembered me. I've seen him a lot over the past couple years. He saw me as I was growing, the beard and the mustache, so he has seen me without them. This man is mentally ill. Because of the laws, since he is not a threat to himself or society, he is in the street, unable to work, and homeless, instead of in a group home or institution where he belongs. Sometimes when I see him, we say hi to each other. Other times, he may shoot me the finger. This time, he was in a talkative mood, and he actually almost made sense. Just before the bus came, he asked where I lived. I told him that I lived down the street from where I was before, and he said, "Can I come home with you?" I said, "I'm sorry, but I'm in a small studio apartment. There's not enough room for two men. Otherwise, I would let you come." It was a small studio, and there was not enough room. But I would not let him come if I had the room. Finally, the bus came. I said goodbye and got on the bus. He got on and said to the driver, "I'm a retired DOT employee, and I forgot my ID." The driver said, "Sorry, you have to get off." After he got off, I thanked the driver and he smiled, knowing that the wino wanted to adopt me. Someday, I hope I will be able to help him and others, lost and forgotten souls. When my book comes out, much of the proceeds will go to help my friends and others like him. This is a hard story to tell because it hasn't ended yet. God only knows the ending will be if he looks into our future. I feel that he allows us to determine our own destiny by our actions so that he may not even know. Mandy is a very pretty lady. She's 40, and when she's clean, she looks like she's 30. Sometimes she even looks like a kid. She is petite. I can pick her up and kiss her with her feet off the ground. I can carry her around with no effort. She's very intelligent. And she has a heart of gold. When you talk to her, you instantly like her. She worked at a bank and had a good future with the bank. She could be a branch manager now, but if it weren't for the one problem, Mandy is a crack addict. When she is high, she goes into a trance. She looks like a little girl who was bad and is waiting for punishment. A few years ago, Mandy came to the building I live in. At the time, it was a building full of addicts, drug dealers, and hookers. When I moved in, the management started cleaning out. Some of the addicts were still here. Mandy met a man who was a loan shark. He started using drugs when she was with him. They lived in the building. The police came one night and had a talk with him. They told him that if he had to find a new profession, or they were going to bust him. Mandy moved out of his place and shared an apartment with a female friend. While she was visiting the guy, they were watching a movie, U.S. Marshals. U.S. Marshals busted in. He was arrested for drugs and loan sharking. Since Mandy was in the room when he got busted, she was evicted and banned from the building. When I met her, it was a date. She had dates to support her habit. She was a hooker. For me, this was supposed to be a sexual experience only. Before long, we fell in love. I had competition. Competition was crack. It still is. I talked to the apartment manager, and he said that Mandy could come into the building again. She was losing her place, and I offered her a place to stay. No drugs in the apartment. No addicts in the apartment. After midnight, if she left, she could not come back in. She tried to cut down. First two nights were okay. Third night, she did not make it. She came in about 11. She moved slowly and talked slow and soft. She was constantly looking around, and every noise was a mystery. Her eyes were wide. She looked like a child that had done something wrong. She went into the bathroom, closed the door. She was in there a long time, and finally I had to pee. She came out, and I went in. I could smell the crack, but I held my tongue. I went back to my desk and worked on the internet. She had her hand on the door. And when I wasn't looking, she started to open the door. I said, if you go out that door, you're not coming back. She left, and I locked the door and went to sleep. During the winter, she was homeless. I told her when she needed a place to stay, she could spend the night with me. that she had to be clean, not high. Once she was in, it was for the night. I was not going to get up in the middle of the night and let her in. I would talk to her about rehab. She had a son who used weed. I heard her talking to him, and she was talking about smoking 5 or more blunts spiked with weed a day. He could not say it. She could not say anything to him. What she was doing was much worse. I told her about herself. She also had a little girl who was a crack baby. The baby has problems because of it. She talked a long time, and she was saying that she wanted to quit. She would promise that she was going the next day. She wanted to get some crack for her last time. I told her as long as she did that, she would not go in. And she wouldn't go in. She promised many times, and a couple times went in. She would go for about a 5-day detox program, and not go back for the 30-day program. I would tell her to come back after the 30-day program. She would knock on my door a few days later. It would be clean. And she would tell me that she is staying clean. As soon as I would take her back, she would come in high again. I haven't seen her in a week. She called the other day and said that she would be in to see me in an hour, and did not show. Yesterday she called and said her food stamps were added to her card, so she was going to get some groceries. She would be here in a couple hours. That was 10:30 in the morning. Still waiting for her at 5:30 in the afternoon. Everyone that knows her wants to keep trying, and I tell her that I am the only one that she can depend on. She is close to losing me. I told her that as long as she was using crack, I was going to see other women. I see 3 other women now. And if Mandy gets rid of her habit, they know that she's the only one I'll be with. If she takes too long, and one of the others straightens out their act, I may end up with that one. I love Mandy, but I will not compete with crack. As long as the woman is abusing drugs or alcohol, I will not commit to her. And these women know each other. And they know each other. They know about each other and they know each other. A friend of theirs just had her heart explode because of drugs. You'd think that she would be think that would be enough to get a person to quit. As I have said many times, she has said that she wanted to quit. As long as I'm around, she thinks she does not have to stop. Next time I see her, I will tell her that I will not see her as long as she's on drugs. This time, I will stick to it. I worked with Sharon. Maybe it will work with Mandy. Maxine was in the lobby talking to security guard. She is full of vim and vigor. She said that she meant what she meant and did not hold back. I gave her my room number and told her to come up sometime. There was a knock on the door, It was a knock that I did not recognize. It was Maxine. She was little at the top, medium in the middle, and big on the bottom. Sort of like those blow-up toys that you knock down, they keep popping up. On her, it looked good. We became friends, and we could talk freely to each other. If she had a problem, I was there for her. She felt that she had her vices under control. She drank a lot. She had her pot when she could get it. And every once in a while, she had some crack. She was a full-blown crack addict. But after rehab, she cut it down to once in a while. She would come to me for beer money sometimes, maybe enough for a joint. Afterwards, she would come back and for some fun in bed. Maxine just got a job with a dry cleaner. Hopefully, she will cut out the drugs and cut down on her alcohol. We have a very good relationship. We have a deep respect for each other. Not quite love. She is a free spirit, and so am I. After 3 days of calls saying that she would be here in an hour, Mandy showed up one morning. She did not look high, but she did look like she was mentally unbalanced. It was like she was going in and out of reality. She was talking normally, then she said, "I smell a dog. My nose is playing tricks on me. I see dog shit on the floor. My eyes are playing tricks on me." Then she would be back to normal. She told me that she was with some friends. She smelled a dog and asked her friends. One said yes, another said no. The one that said yes was high. The one that said no was not. She decided she was smelling things. I don't think she realized that she went through that a few minutes ago with me. She also was going through paranoia. The whole carpeting was removed and the floor was concrete. Footsteps and the opening of the elevator doors echoed through the hallway into my room. The stairway was next to my room. So when someone used the stairs, it sounded like they were walking in the room. This drives her crazy. She hears the noises and thinks someone is coming for her. There were a few times when she would call me and tell me someone was in her room. Even at my place, she would check the closets in the bathroom thinking someone was in the room listening to us. I told her that it was time for rehab. If she doesn't do something now, she may end up in an asylum or on the streets talking to herself. The drugs are messing it with her brains. It may be too late. I hope not. As she left, she told me that she was going to rehab. She said she knows that if she doesn't, she is doomed. She has said that before. Pray for her. She is a good woman with a bad habit. She needs help, and she needs to let the real Mandy out. As of the time I was finishing this portion of the book, Mandy was still using crack. She started drinking more. She is still saying that she is going in tomorrow and not. This lady could be whatever she wants, but she is a crackhead. She chose crack over those that she loves. She is a lost soul, and I pray that she finds herself. She said she wants to work on a Castle of Hope with me. She has to find herself first. Last week she came to me. Another friend had died from drugs. she said, it's time to quit. I ran the book off the computer, told her that her story was the end of the book. I told her that it had an unhappy ending. I hoped that she would make it a happy ending. She went to detox. She got out of detox, said she read it. She wanted to have a happy ending. Day after Mother's Day, she was supposed to go into a 30-day program. I haven't heard from her in 5 days. I hope she's in rehab. That's the end.